Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This the red-nosed reindeer
Rudolph,
had a
by
very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it,
I am in a ready holiday mood. I guess I'm jumping the gun here, but this song's been going around in my head. I've got to go with the inner man. I loved Gene Autry as a kid. They were good people, him and Mrs. Autry. Well, Roy Rogers, too, they were good. All right, thank you very much. Yeah, I can't talk over him. They can't follow it. I told you, you can't, whatever. So here we are, a week before Thanksgiving. My mind is already on the turkey and the whole deal, and I talk to people in the business. They're drawing to relatives in Atlanta and Chicago. They're flying, you know, it's great holiday. Everyone gets together. But I'm reminded of that movie, Avalon. Years ago, remember that movie Avalon, how great that movie was? It starts out in Baltimore, probably in the 50s. Large, extended immigrant Jewish family, all getting together for Thanksgiving. Everyone, you know, rough and push and tush and grandma, grandfather, everyone's in the house. And as the movie ends, an hour and a half later, they've all had fights. Half of them are dead, and they don't talk to each other. And each of them is individually alone in their apartment or house in front of a television set with a tray of takeout turkey. And I said, that's so like what America is. It's amazing to me, you know. So I'm blah, blah, blah. I have been thinking about it. I truly have. And here are some of the headlines today. The stock market dropped again over 400 points. Has the election of Obama, do you think, had a negative effect on the economy? I don't think it's Obama, although I do think it's the Obamaites. I think it's that, but I also think it's Paulson's chicanery and the fact that him and the other one, the guy with the Barbasol sideburns, the guy at the head of the Federal Reserve, I think the two of them have such lack, the confidence is lacking in them, because no matter what they take from the taxpayer, it's only going to their friends. For example, there's an article on my website, the Bank of America is going to use the bailout money to buy a bank in China. Hello. Oh, wait, there's another story that's so frightening, you're not going to believe this one. Oh, I got to shut that off. This you're not going to believe. I saw it on my website. I almost fell off the chair. Report says China could buy General Motors and Chrysler. This is beyond comprehension. Chinese carmaker SAIC and Dongfeng have plans to acquire General Motors and Chrysler. That means they will own our production capacity to build tanks and military vehicles. And that shows you once again what I have been telling you for months and months, if not years, that, let me put it in a very nice manner, the Quislings are running America. Or shall I say it's the bottom line mentality that is running America. And as you well know, if you have a bottom line mentality running anything may happen. Do you have any idea what this means, that permit China to buy General Motors and Chrysler means that if we ever need to make tanks on their production lines, as was done in World War II, we'd have to go ask our potential adversary, China, why don't you just let them buy the shipyards and go a step further? And I've fantasized on this. We wake up one morning and we find out that the White House is under new management. Little fellas with red stars are now running the White House because they'll do it for less money. And since the bottom line is all that matters, who cares who the president is, right? Why not a guy from the People's Republic of China? After all, we're 50, 60, 70% there. Anyway, the only difference is they don't take your kidneys out yet if you disagree with them politically. At least that's the rambling thoughts of Michael Savage. Do you think we should pay ransom to the pirates? Or do you think we should bomb the pirates' villages, as was done by Admiral Decatur way back when military men were military men as opposed to petticoat wearers? military men on the Savage Nation listening to this program, can you give me prime examples in this hour of what you've seen your ships or your units going from warriors to pacifists? It's a clumsy sentence, but basically you know what I'm talking about. By the way, here's another little story for you. Lawrence Eagleburger, G.H.W. Bush's Secretary of State, said today that Hillary Clinton would be good in the same position. Is there any more doubt in your mind that there are no Democrats and no Republicans, but only a single party of oligarchs, the Demokins or Republicrats? Ho, 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 ho. Play Rudolph for a minute while I catch my breath here.
Rudolph,
look at this article.
The red-nosed reindeer.
Turn it off now. Canada court says obese have a right to two airlines. I can't believe what I'm reading. You know, I have a soft spot for Canada. My mother, God rest her soul, was born in Montreal. So as a youngster, I would go to Montreal. I used to love the teacups. The Canadians were nice, friendly people. I've always had good experience with Canada, but it's become a loony bin of left-wing insanity. Today, the so-called High Court, actually, it's quite appropriate, the High Court of Canada. The High Court of Canada, because they're all stoned, declined to hear an appeal by Canadian Airlines of a government decision that, quote, people who are functionally disabled by obesity deserve to have two seats for one fare. You hear? Two seats for one fare. I mean, that's very fair that a fat slob should get two seats for one fare. That's very fair that a fat pig should get two seats for one fare. Why don't you say you're functionally disabled by anxiety and you need a whole row? Go next to the next level. That you like a whole row to yourself to stretch out in because you're functionally disabled as an anxiety case. That's all. AP could lose 10% of staff in 2009. That's not good for me because I get most of my stories from the Associated Press and modify them accordingly. They do a good job of reporting. I mean, you have to deconstruct and reconstruct to understand what's really going on. But without reporters, talk radio's dead. Then I'll have to just read from psychological nudity and tell you more family stories as they develop. You know what I'm saying? No? Tennessee, Sean, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'd like to hear your story about the Making Love by the Sewer Plant. I love that one because it reminds me of something.
Why do you like Love by the Sewer Plant? There's not a dirty word in it, you know.
Well, I know. I guess that's a problem for certain people I know elsewhere because they always like a gory, horrible stuff, you know.
No, if you want XXX, you know, pornographic literature, you can get that on HBO any night. You can get it from anywhere you turn. But when I write Love by the Sewer Plant or The Nympho in Alley Pond Park, there's not one F word, not S word, nothing. Because what it is about life. And if life is poignant, you don't need to shock people with filthy words. That's for the subliterate inner-city psychopaths who don't have the English language at their disposal. So they have to revert to the F-word and the S-word. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. And I do hope, I know this is off the subject, I do hope you are going to win that case about CARE. I really hate what they're doing to you.
Whoa. That case is over. They try to hit me for almost $180,000 in legal fees. My lawyer fired back and said that they're not entitled to it, and the judge appointed by Bill Clinton, a liberal judge, sided with me and threw their case out for legal fees. Did you know that?
Oh, I know. That's horrible. But, you know, I support you all the way. I really hope the best. I hope you sock it to those people. I really do.
Well, at this point, I'm out of the CARE case. Somebody else is going to finally expose them, in my opinion, for who they are. It's inevitable that one day people will come to understand who they really are, you know.
And I want to join your Nationalist Party, too.
Well, you really have a big shopping list. Well, I hope Santa visits you very soon, Sean. But right now, Santa's going to send you a copy of Psychological Nudity if you can tell me why you want to hear Love by the Sewer Plant.
Well, because I had a crush on this girl once that never happened, you know, and I had – it's basically I, you know, imagine things. You know how young people are.
How long ago was this?
Well, it was actually over 15 or 16 years ago. I was in middle school, you know.
50 or 60 years ago or 15 or 16?
Or 16 years ago.
Oh. You know, that's an interesting question for a show. It's an interesting question for a radio show. Are there people listening to this show who still burn a flame for a love going back decades, someone you've not seen? That is, You know, I think people carry around these idealized images of someone that they were going out with or whatever, and it didn't work out, and they think, oh, I missed the boat. I should have married her, you know? And you know what makes me think of that? I watched a movie last night that I couldn't tell you, that I can tell you I love. Ben Stiller in The Heartbreak Kid. Did you ever see that movie?
Oh, I've heard of it. I like it.
Oh, it's so good. Send the fellow a book. I got to tell you that I'm going to take a minute on this. You know, I don't get too involved in comedy movies. I happen to think Ben Stiller is a comic genius. I think he's the best. I really like the guy. I know he's a liberal. Doesn't matter to me. I judge the man by his art. His politics are not my concern right now. He's a fabulous comedian, and so is his father. Comes from a very fabulous thing. You can see he became this way because his father was. His timing is so much better than Woody Allen, who's the Stephen Fetchett of the Jewish genre, that they're not even in the same category. Woody, I mean, this guy is so good, Ben Stiller. Anyway, he did a movie called The Heartbreak Kid. So it opens in San Francisco, and the street scenes are great. And he's you know, a dating guy, single guy. And he's walking down the street, and a pickpocket, a mugger, grabs a pocketbook from a purse from a girl and bangs into him. And, you know, he tries to get the purse back. Then he gets sprayed in the eye. And then she says, oh, thanks for helping me. But he doesn't get the bag back. And she's a stunningly good-looking blonde girl. I forget her name. I don't even know. And blah, blah, blah. They fall in love. And he's still afraid to get married because he's a typical single guy, doesn't want to commit. They get married. And they go on a honeymoon to Cabo San Lucas. It is a scream, what she turns out to be. She's a singer. She's a hummer. It turns out she has a deviated septum from being a coke user. She's a sex maniac. In other words, it's a stereotype of everything possible wrong with a woman of your dreams. Turns out that that's who she was. And instead of being Miss Innocent Christmas Face, she turns out to be a complete nightmare. And he's trying to tell her in Cabo San Lucas that he's fallen in love with another woman at the hotel while he's married to her on the honeymoon. And this other woman's like Miss Innocent, you know. Anyway, I can't give away all the details, but the plot is so intricate and so well done, and his timing is so good. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But it brought to mind how many people out there must carry around some idealized picture of some woman or some guy they knew 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you know. Let's say you're in a bad marriage, which is par for the course. And you think, I've compromised. What if I had gone with John, let's say? What if I'd married my college sweetheart instead of this lunk that I'm stuck with, stuck with all these years? You know, what you don't realize, like, you're idealizing what John was. You know, go take a look at John today if he's still living. He's lunk, too. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. You know, people say the Bible is filled with thou shalt nots and everything is no good and you're evil. But if you look at Psalms, listen to this one. This you probably never heard. A Psalm of David. Happy is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is pardoned. Happy is the man unto whom the Lord counteth not iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no guile. I like that one. What's wrong with that? What is wrong with that? Why not have a little pardoned? Why can't we all pardon ourselves? Would you like to pardon yourself instead of waiting for somebody to pardon you? Why do you have to have somebody pardon you for your sins? First of all, I've seen a liberal interpretation of what the word sin means, which is to have missed the mark, which I think is the best interpretation of the word sin. Sin is too extreme in the sense most of us have sinned daily. But that means miss the mark, okay? A real sin is not what you did. A real sin is hurting a child in ways that I don't even want to talk about on the show. That's a real sin. A real sin is cutting an infidel's nothing. So stop beating yourself up. I mean, you know, get over it already. You're a nice person compared to most of the people on the earth, is what I'd like to tell you. Uncle Savage says, leave yourself alone already. Life is hard enough. What do you need to be guilty for? Give yourself a break. Christopher San Diego, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good afternoon, Dr. Savage. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to tell you how much you've had an impact on my life in the past couple of years. I've been in the automotive business, and one day I was just sitting in a car on our lot. I came across your your talk show. And so I started listening. And so I said, this guy sounds like he really knows what he's talking about. So I started saving my money. And lo and behold, last month I got laid off. And I just thank God that I saved my money. And I listened to things that you said about the direction our economy is going in, despite what the president would say, despite what McCain said,
I mean, at the time that you were listening, I was advising frugality and caution and don't spend every dime you have on credit. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. And when you talked about the Bible, I went to Luke 12:15, you know, and it talks about, Jesus talked about watch out and guard yourselves from every kind of greed. And so I said, well, I'm just going to save my money. And people thought I was nuts when I told them I thought we had bad times coming.
I'm good on the Jeremiah bad times are coming, because I've seen this for a long time. It's not that I'm a pessimist. I'm a realist, Christopher. And although we are in the beginning of bad times, they're only the infancy of bad times. We all see what's right around the horizon, and it's not very good. It's not very pleasant. Obama cannot fix what's broken. There's no question about it. This man has inherited a hot potato that is almost unfixable at this time.
So it
would be fixable if the people were willing to start living in a more realistic manner. One car in a family instead of five. Maybe one vacation every year instead of five. You know what I'm talking about. I'll give you an example. Every house in America, every middle-class house in this country, virtually has a second refrigerator in the back room or in the basement that they use for something like drinks. Am I right about that?
Yes.
If we just shut off the second refrigerators, I live with my mother's house. Somehow we live without a second refrigerator. What do we need a second refrigerator for? We had one car, not five. Now, I have many cars and many refrigerators. That's not the point. I'm giving you an example of what people can do without that they don't even think they could do without. They think they have to have that second refrigerator, for example. How about air conditioning? How did people live without air conditioning in America until the 1960s, for example? Only the very rich had air conditioning before then, and even that, it was intermittent. I remember in the 50s, Cadillac came out with air conditioning in the back of their Fleetwoods, and you saw the plastic tubes. We thought they were Rockefeller. Anyone in my neighborhood who had a tube in the back of the car was a Rockefeller. You know, now, if you don't have air conditioning, you're on, you know, the unwashed masses. This is an example. The cost of the air conditioning is not the issue. It's the energy usage for the air conditioning. You want to talk about saving energy? There's a thousand ways you can do it.
Savage.
I don't know about you, but when I get around holiday times, I start to get a little spacey. My head is off the politics already. Sure, the market is down day after day. Sure, the crooks are robbing the country blind. Sure, you've seen nothing yet once the Clintonites get the country back, et cetera, and so on. What's the point of talking about it right now? You know, North Carolina, Dan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, where's Mr. Scungeli?
Oh, my God, my character. One of my characters is John Scungeli. And you would like to hear him on which topic? You just brought it up out of the blue. I'd have to do this on the improvisational level. How about John Scungeli on the bailout?
Oh, he'd be great on that.
All right, stay on the line, and we're going to do – I'm going to see if I can conjure up John Scungeli. I'll have to only do 15 seconds of it, and tomorrow morning maybe I'll do a whole piece on him with David Rubin as the interlocutor. Okay, let's see.
Bailout? What bailout? What are you talking bailout, schmuck? Bailout. We had another name for it. It wasn't bailout. It was called Bunko, fool. What, because they went to Yale? They wear a white shirt and tie, and they speak the King's English. They're bigger crooks than anybody I ever met. All right, so they don't shoot anybody. They just use the military to suppress all nations. We may take down a business. They take down a nation. What? What bailout? What are you talking about?
Okay, tomorrow we got a good start on Scungeli, right? And tomorrow. Dan, was that a good start, Dan?
Incredible. Dr. Savage, you also need to bring back your movie reviews, like when you did Bareback Mountain.
Oh, stop. Yeah, I really nailed that one. There aren't any movies along those lines. No real insults recently. No really insulting movies that I can talk about. I mean, I'm trying to watch movies I like Ben Stiller in The Heartbreak Kid. Did you see that movie?
Now, I really haven't gone to movies much at all, except for...
No, I watch it in bed at night. I don't go to a movie. What do I need, pneumonia? I need a disease from an illegal alien or some octogenarian there without an oxygen tank? I don't like a movie theater for a number of reasons. I don't like coughing. I don't like women's perfume. I don't like people in front of me. I don't like people behind me. I don't like people next to me. I don't like... Why would you watch a movie in a theater when you have a bed with a television set and cable? Why?
Yeah, there's absolutely no reason.
No reason. Thank you for calling, Dan. This is the Savage Nation. Judge orders release of five Gitmo suspects is the lead story on MichaelSavage.com. UN agency says Iran has fuel for one bomb. I am so tired of reading about Iran and the bomb. I'm sick and tired of Israel crying wolf. I'm sick of them screaming, "Oy vey! Oh, Iran's about to get the bomb. Tomorrow they're going to get the bomb. Oy vey!" I'm sick of it. We've given you a military. What happened to you, Israel? What happened to you? After Golda Meir passed away, you lost you know what. Use your airplanes already and stop complaining. Stop kvetching already about Iran. I'm not interested in this is what goes on in my head. Iran. Oh, they're going to get the bomb. 2 years I've been hearing Iran is a day away from the bomb, a minute away from the bomb. They have the bomb. They don't have the bomb. They're going to get the bomb. Once they get the bomb, existential existence is gone. Oh, what should we do? You have a military. You allegedly have a great air force. Bomb the you-know-what out of them. Knock out their facilities. Stop already with Iran. I don't want to hear it is what I think to myself. Again, Iran produced a bomb, and they might make it in 2 years. 2 years ago, I heard they were going to make it any second. I don't really know what to believe anymore. I know that the Iranians are wonderful people. I also know that Ahmadinejad, who they tell me is not even Iranian but probably Turkish, and this is not an aspersion upon Turks, he's not Persian by descent. And I've heard this from Iranians. There's apparently a large racial divide in Iran. They look down upon him the way the Germans look down upon Hitler the Austrian, incidentally. There's a direct comparison between Hitler the Austrian, who took over Germany, and Ahmadinejad, who they say is of Turkish origins, who basically is running Iranian almost off the cliff with his insanity. So it's not my job. We have the president. We have all the wonderful leaders of the military who can't even fire a 22 caliber bullet at a pirate's, you know, rubber boat. Let them deal with it. All our appropriations now. We need more appropriations, or the Russians or the Chinese or the Martians are going to get us. Just give us another $1 trillion for another weapon system that another schmuck from Yale won't permit us to use. Go ahead. But it's good for our pockets. You talk about John Scungilli. How about John Scungilli on the military-industrial complex? Huh. See, already the voice went out a little bit right in the voice box. The minute I go into a character, I don't do it for that reason. It's a strain on the larynx, and not to mention the tailbone, which is connected to the. Because if I do a voice like that, even 20 seconds these days, right away a pain. I got to get the zinc lozenge, the tea, the Frank Sinatra technique, gargle the salt water, rest, not talk. But I'm not going to stop. That's all. I refuse to stop. I refuse to stop. New Orleans, Bert, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. It's a pleasure to speak to you, Dr. Savage.
Yes, sir.
You were talking about movies earlier, and I've been wanting to tell you this. In Godfather 2, there's a character named Frank Pantangeli. And
great character. The guy with the eyebrows. Loved him.
Yeah, you remind me of your mannerisms. And also, when he was testifying against Michael Corleone, his brother came, and they brought him in the courtroom, and he didn't speak. It was like his silence.
I love that scene. The brother from Sicily who didn't say one word, but when he was about to rat out the family, he took one look at the surprise witness, the observer in the back, and it was his brother. The minute the brother was there, he dummied up. He didn't say a word. Remember that? Great scene. Brilliant. Genius. I love the brother, and I love they said, can I see my brother? No, he flew in, and the minute he sat there, he went home the next day, didn't even eat a meal. That's like me. Why does he want to eat spaghetti in New York or Washington for when he's from Sicily and he can have it in his own kitchen?
That's right, and it was his silent brother, just like this your brother in your book.
Well, now, come on, but my poor brother's... Yeah, but wait a minute, that silent brother... Wait, I shouldn't reject this out of hand. My silent brother died when he was, you know, young years ago. This is a How do you see a comparison there?
They wouldn't let his brother speak. He couldn't speak English, and he didn't even have to speak. He basically hung himself by not testifying against Corleone. He stood up for his
brother. But how does that brother, who said nothing but intimidated him with a look, compare with my brother, who never said a word because he was born handicapped, if you want to put it to you that way?
Well, I'm not so sure he intimidated him. I just think that his feelings for his brother, he had to stand up for.
Oh, you mean he didn't want to dishonor the family by becoming a rat?
Correct.
Oh, that's interesting. See, I understand that. In other words, his brother looked at him to say, "You're going to become a rat? Our family name is going to be besmirched by your activities here? Never." I actually thought he was afraid his brother would, you know, have him whacked if he did it. That's very interesting. You're a very thoughtful man. No doubt you voted for Obama.
Oh, no way.
I'm sorry. All right, you get a free copy of Psychological Nudity. How can I not? Look, it's Thanksgiving. First edition's gone, finished. I mean, the first printing is gone. It went last night. We're on to the first edition, second printing. They arrived at the shipping house today. And I'm telling you, I hope you buy them. That's all for your own sake. You're going to love it for the holidays. I really mean that. It's my gift to you. And I don't want to beat it up. That's all. I hope you enjoy it, and we'll read together. 1-800-449-8255. Website, michaelsavage.com. The right eye doesn't work, but the left eye does. Sanford wood-burning pollution topic. That's a good topic. I was going to do that today, but then they're going to think I'm a communist. Here. Let me read you the story, Cole. Fireplace police on patrol. Smoke can draw fire. Dateline San Francisco. The fireplace police descended on the Bay Area Wednesday. For the first time ever, residential fires are illegal under a new law passed in July that bans home burning on winter season spare the air days. The first such ban took effect at noon. 70 inspectors from the Bay Area Quality Management District plan to spend the day and evening patrolling residential neighborhoods looking for telltale chimney wisps. Violators will get warnings by mail. Repeat offenders face fines of as much as $2,000. Now, I want to tell you something. I am glad. Now, you say, how could you, a conservative, agree that we should have an all-invasive government on a thing like a fire? Isn't that a right? The answer is no, it is not a right. Not in a suburban or urban setting, it is not a right to cause cancer and asthma for your neighbor. I have suffered for years in this county of Marin from phony liberals who pretend they're greens and pollute the air. There are neighbors I cannot wait to call the police on. How do you like that? I have neighbors. I hope to God they put their fireplace out and they put them in jail for what they've done to my peace and quiet. What good is a house if your neighbor in a suburban community burns firewood that every night belches out black smoke that descends upon your air, and you can't breathe at night and have to shut your windows? What good is a community that doesn't that has people like this in it, that could care less about their neighbor, but they're all into lip service? They're all environmentalists and green and for the earth and save the universe. And I'm telling you, there's a neighbor who has a peace sign on her curb. You know, Miss Peace, bicyclist, peace sign, Obama. And every night in the winter, you could die. Your eyes smart. You can't breathe till 2 in the morning. What kind of person is this? Now, I did send them a note. They threw it in the garbage. Now I'm going to send them to police. Now, I know you're going to call me and say, that is so left-wing of you, or, you know, socialistic or liberal. How dare you agree with it? What do you want me to do? I'm not entitled to a clean night of air? What do I move to the suburbs for but for clean air and peace and quiet, and I have none? Between the garbage companies, which are out of control, 5 in the morning, the illegal aliens are banging up and down the street. Any civilized community would stop this. But no, not here, not in peaceful Marin, because if you say anything to the garbage company and the illegal aliens on the truck, oh, you're being mean to the illegal aliens? Why are they letting them run up and down the streets at 5 o'clock in the morning? What kind of zoning is that that permits garbage trucks to make that much noise that you can't sleep when you have to perform a day's work? And what kind of stupid community permits morons to belch wood fire all over the neighborhood other than a moronic community that's basically anarchistic, is what I say to myself every day of my life. So you have a choice. So move to the country. You want to burn a fire? Burn one if you live in a rural setting. Or if I don't like the smoke, you could say I could move to the country, but I don't live in the country. I have a right to clean air. To me, that's a right. And I don't like the man next door having the right to destroy my right to clean air any more than I like the garbage company having the right to say, you know what, drop dead, I'll run the truck anytime I want. What kind of community permits that? What community permits garbage trucks that have 1950s technology to go up and down a street, polluting the street with that kind of noise when there are alternatives? Tell me about it. I hope to God you understand what I'm saying to you. I'm not going to ask you a question because I know you're going to call on this in a minute. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. There's so many amazing stories out there. The stock market down another 400 points. Yesterday, almost 500 points. Judge orders release of five Gitmo suspects. This is an interesting story again. A so-called federal judge ordered the release of five Algerian terror suspects held without charges at Guantanamo Bay Prison for almost 7 years. Now, guys, get the soundbite ready of the lawyer from NYU. Listen to this left-wing lawyer celebrating the release of terrorists who will no doubt come back to plague all of us. Listen to this.
I believe in the American justice system. It shouldn't have taken this long. People locked in the government system based on mistakes. But absolutely, I believe this would happen.
All right, here's a left-wing psychopath whose ancestors fled the Tsar, no doubt, who now spends his every working day trying to undermine America, in my opinion, an ACLU lawyer who hates the country with a DNA passion you cannot comprehend, a passion of hatred you can never comprehend. Of course, they say they're for civil rights and human rights, but they're not. Therefore, they work, let us say, for another agenda entirely. It has nothing to do with civil rights or human rights. It is entirely, it makes Obama look like George Washington. What they believe in makes Obama look like George Washington. Let's put it to you that way. But there's an interesting side note to this story. Here you have five Algerian terror suspects that have been held for 7 years at Guantanamo, right? Basically with very minimal charges, with very little evidence. So you say, well, okay, these guys really just want to make sure that these people get due process. Well, that's very nice if you're dealing with an American citizen. Due process. I certainly would not want to live in a country without due process. But these people were held as enemy combatants. And I read the original case of the Kieran case going back to 1942 or 3 when the liberal president, some would say socialist president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, held Germans under the enemy combatant statute that they put in place, by the way, saying that they came here, the Germans, to do us harm. These were guys who landed ashore in Long Island on a submarine, a Nazi submarine, and they were captured. Well, they were, unlike today, these enemy combatants today were given kid glove treatment, and now they're released. They've been given full civil rights, only to come back and harm us tomorrow. While in FDR's day, they were given a quick trial and executed. I think one of them was released. The argument is, from these left-wing psychopaths to a man who are paranoid maniacs, is that we cannot permit the government to simply arrest people without charges and hold them indefinitely. Well, I would agree with that if it's an American citizen. But these were not American citizens. These were five Algerian terror suspects who were being held to make sure they didn't harm you or your children. So there's a huge difference between an American citizen afforded the protections of the U.S. Constitution and foreigners who have attempted to do us harm. But you have to ask yourself why the ACLU would protect five Algerian terror suspects and afford them the same benefits to the Constitution that you have when these rats would love to rip up your Constitution and replace it with no law whatsoever. Probably with Sharia law, which is having your hand cut off if you rob a bread. Or let's say mutilating your wife if she goes out with someone they don't approve of. The Department of Justice plans to appeal the Washington, D.C. court's ruling. The source told Fox News, if the decision is upheld, the government will make arrangements to transfer the five men back to, listen, Algeria or Bosnia. Oh, Bosnia. No kidding. Now, that's a little subtext. So some of the terrorists were from Bosnia. Now, what does Bosnia have to do with this? Bosnia is what Clinton worked to. Let's start again. Clinton bombed the Serbs who were trying to prevent the Muslim takeover, not only of southern Europe, but of the entire, all of Europe itself. I want to remind you that Kosovo has been a part of Serbia since the 1300s. But Bill Clinton and his cohorts, who are now taking back the U.S. government under Obama as a front man, bombed the Serbs mercilessly for almost 80 days, killing about 2,500 men, women, and children, innocent men, women, and children, all Serbs, none of them in the military. They got away with murder. Richard Holbrooke, I can name you, all the people involved. Jamie Rubin, I remember them like I remember the fingers of my hand. To me, they're all war criminals. They killed 2,500 innocent men, women, and children in Serbia. Why? In order to segregate Kosovo, separate it from Serbia. Well, you say, well, that's because the Serbs were committing atrocities against Bosnians. Well, they were, but the Bosnians also were committing atrocities against Serbs. And back and forth, it was a terrible neighborhood with terrible people, but we took the wrong side. Why did Clinton choose the side of the Bosnians? Why did he choose to liberate the Kosovo Liberation Army, who are all Muslim fanatics? Well, I wrote an article at the time called The Oily Tracks Run Through Kosovo. I was 10, 12 years ahead of my time. It had nothing to do with human rights. It had nothing to do with Muslims. It had nothing to do with Christians. It had nothing to do with right or wrong. It had to do with an oil pipeline running out of the Caspian Sea right through the quickest route into Europe, which happened to be through Kosovo. Always follow the money, and you'll find out you can figure things out if you follow the money. So now let's go back to these terror suspects. This left-wing lawyer, this ACLU lawyer, shops it to a federal judge, so-called, and Judge Richard J. Leon releases the five men, saying they cannot be held indefinitely as enemy combatants. That means they're going to go back to doing what they were doing when they were captured, which is plotting and planning to kill your daughter, plotting and planning to blow up a city or a power plant near you. I ask you a question. Can a house divided survive? No, my friends, a house divided cannot survive, which is why this house is falling down. This is the most divided house in the West, and it is crumbling. And if you think that the edifice is falling right now, you are right. Unfortunately, the foundation is next. What can I do to stop it? I've tried for 15 long years to breathe some sense and rationality into this nation. Has it done any good? Truthfully, no. I would have to admit that my work has been a failure. I would have to admit that. Oh, yes, I'll keep fighting. I'll fight to the end. But ultimately, the battle is over.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I had a geometry teacher in high school. He had two fingers on his right hand. He was a tough guy. He was an Irishman and real tough, but a very good teacher, and the kind of teacher who made you come up to the blackboard and perform at the blackboard, and if you didn't, he ridiculed you. He didn't curse you out, but he called you a dummy. Basically, he says, "Now, what's the matter with you today, Michael? Is your brain not functioning?" That kind of thing. And believe me, you didn't want to wind up in front of that class not knowing your stuff because you didn't want to be humiliated in front of your peers called your classroom. Now, today, they take every moron off the street, every idiot, every dumb dyslexic, every idiot who has one eye going up, one eye going down. He can't talk, he can't see, he can't hear. And they tell you he's smarter than you are. And if you dare be smarter than him, you go to the back of the class. But in those days, it was very clear. If you were smart, you were smart. If you were stupid, you were dumb. And that was the end of it. And no one changed anything. So to make a long, he had a left hand with five fingers and a right hand with two fingers. And the two fingers were stubs. But he could still put chalk on a board. And when he said to you, the midterm exams are back, he would read out every name and every score publicly. Now, why do you think he did it? Because he understood that by doing well, you were proud of yourself, and the kids looked up to you. And by doing poorly, you were ashamed of yourself, boys and girls, and you try to do better. But because the liberal perverts took over the schools, where they try to put perversion ahead of everything else, they have now taken dummies and try to make that better than the smarties. And consequently, the schools can't even teach Johnny how to add or read. And if Johnny's smart enough and he can't focus at all, they put him on Ritalin to dope him up and turn him into a sissy and a dumbbell who can't do anything except sit in a cubicle the rest of his life and possibly jump off a building when he's 25. Now, how Mr. W. lost his fingers is another interesting story. We all knew about it very fast. I forget his full name. It was Mr. W. And it was whispered in the halls of the high school that he lost his fingers, and I'm not glorifying it, planting a bomb for the IRA. Now, I don't know whether it was true, but it was certainly enough to make us understand not to mess around with this teacher. And we didn't. We respected him. Whether it was true or not is irrelevant. That's who we had for teachers in those days.
Savage.
To me, religion teaches peace and getting along with your fellow man and do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I have never encountered in my life a religion that teaches to hate other religions and to kill people who don't follow that religion. And by definition, one day we're going to have to come to terms with the fact that such a definition may not include this religion as practiced by too many adherents in this country and in other Western countries. It cannot stand. We will not survive if we permit people to believe that their religion is the only religion and other religions must be annihilated, and people who practice those other religions must be converted or killed. It's incompatible with our existence. And by definition, those are not religious teachings. They are political, homicidal teachings. And one day, we're going to have a leadership with the guts to outlaw such teachings. As sure as I'm sitting here, it's coming. It has to come, or this country will disappear. I have studied the story of the great days of the Arabs. And it is one of the most amazing stories of conquest in the whole history of the human race. They smashed the Byzantine army at the Battle of Yarmouk, a tributary of the Jordan River, in 634. And I'm not going to go through the entire list of countries that they conquered. But you must understand that the Arabs conquered Persians and converted the Persians to Islam. You may not know that, but the Persians were not always Islamic. They conquered Syria. They conquered Palmyra, Antioch, Jerusalem, and converted them to Islam, or large elements of the population went over to Islam. And then the Persians went over to Egypt, I believe, and they had a great host with a great force of elephants, and they won. They conquered Persia, as I said. The Muslim Empire kept pushing into western Turkestan and pushing eastward until it met the Chinese. Egypt fell to the Muslims almost without resistance to the new conquerors, who were driven by a fanatical belief in the sufficiency of the Quran. They were ignoramuses, they read nothing, they hated the written word in any other form, and they wiped out the vestiges of the book copying industry of the Alexandria Library that they found in Egypt. They burnt it to the ground. They then poured along the north coast of Africa, and they entered the Straits of Gibraltar and Spain. The Muslim invaders invaded Spain in 710. They crossed the Pyrenees Mountains in 720. In 732, the Arab advance had reached the center of France. They threatened to take over all of France. But finally, the Arab advance was stopped for good at the Battle of Poitiers and thrust back as far as the Pyrenees again. It was only through fighting that the French retained their civilization whatsoever. Now, I don't have the time to go into these early years of the Arabs and the conquest in these 25 years, but you should know that in 25 years, the Muslim Empire expanded greatly across Persia, Persia at that time, Iran today, Arabia, Egypt. And as I said, almost conquered a good portion of Europe itself. But they didn't kill everybody. This is the interesting part. The maniacs today, the little men with beards today, are actually worse than the early Arab conquerors. These throwbacks that we're seeing today in Hezbollah, for example, are not representative of the Arab today. They're not even representative of the Arab of 1,000 years ago. Because when the Arab conquered these other countries, they didn't kill everybody. We can talk about some of the murders if you want, but we should talk about the effect upon the human mind and the general destinies in those nations. The Arab intelligence, never forget, was a great intelligence. And the Arab intelligence that entered these other countries was flung across the world even more swiftly and dramatically than the Greeks had entered 1,000 years before. They stimulated the intellect of the whole world west of China. They broke up old ideas and developed new ones, and it was an enormous advancement for mankind. In fact, when the Muslim Arab mind entered Spain, it discovered an active Jewish tradition of speculation and discussion, and it integrated, it pollinated, and they worked together. In Central Asia, the Arab mind met Buddhism and the material achievements of Chinese civilization. The Arabs learned the manufacture of paper, which made printed books possible. Who? From? From the Chinese. And finally, the Arabs came into contact with Indian mathematics and philosophy. And what happened as a result of these interactions was the intolerant self-sufficiency of the early days of faith, which made the Quran seem the only possible book, was dropped. And suddenly, a renaissance occurred. Learning sprang up everywhere in the footsteps of the Arab conquerors. And so by the 8th century, there was an educational organization throughout the entire Arabized world. And I'm going to pause right there. What we have here are people who are actually pre-8th century, some of them calling this show. Here they are living in the United States of America, the most advanced civilization in the world has ever known. Instead of pollinating and integrating with this world, they continue to disseminate the hatred of the 7th century. Because by the 8th century, the Arab conquerors had created educational organizations, and learning sprang up everywhere in the footsteps of these Arab conquerors. But here in America, we have throwbacks teaching the most ignorant, the most homicidal people in this country that the 7th century is the century to live in, and people who do not practice their religion are less than human, and they must either be converted or you know what else. And so we have a real problem on our hands. But again, I want to remind you that by the 9th century, learned men in the schools of Cordoba in Spain were writing and corresponding with learned men in Cairo, Baghdad, Bukhara, and Samarkand. The Jewish mind and the Arab mind assimilated very well together, and for a time the two Semitic races worked very beautifully together through the language of Arabic. They didn't kill each other. The Arabs didn't kill the Jews. And I'm talking the 9th century. In the 9th century, these throwbacks in the Palestinian world and the Hezbollah are actually a throwback beyond the 9th century, whether you know it or not. And long after the political breakup and the weakening of the Arabs, the intellectual community of the Arab-speaking world actually endured. Unfortunately, it's died by today. But it was still producing considerable results in the 13th century. But we have people in the Arab world today who are living before the 13th century, as I told you. All you have to do is study some of the history. All you have to do is look at the Museum of Alexandria that they burned to the ground in the 7th century. All you've got to do is look at the wonderful things that the Arab mind gave the world. The clumsy Roman numerals, as you know, were thrown out by the Arabic figures that we use to this day. Many of the ignoramuses who call the show, who say that they're experts in the Quran, don't even know that the Arabic numbers that they're using replaced the Roman numerals. They don't even know who Rome was or what the Roman numerals were. The Arabs gave us the zero sign. The very name algebra is Arabic. So was the word chemistry. The names of such stars as Algol, Aldebaran, and Boots preserve the traces of Arab conquests of astronomy in the sky. And so they reanimated the medieval philosophy of France and Italy and the whole Christian world. So the Arabs were a great contribution to world civilization. And you must understand that they also gave us very great advances, although there was barbarism amongst them. They gave us great advances in metallurgy and technology, alloys, dyes, distilling, tinctures and essences, optical glass, were all discovered by Arab scientists. Of course, they were looking for the elixir vitae, a stimulant that would keep people living forever and prolong life indefinitely. But that's okay. That's what drove them. It drives many of us today. I understand that. The bottom line of what I'm telling you is that the Arab mind, the Muslim mind, had integrated with the world, even the worlds that it had conquered, and was getting along with them by the 8th and 9th century. And yet we have people who have called this show who are reflecting the mind of the 7th century Muslim. The ignorance is astounding to me, but when you reflect upon the collapse of the American educational system, the dissemination of lies by the vermin in the media who have made everything morally equivalent, I am not surprised that we have fallen back to the 7th century, or that so many members of our society are still living in the 7th century.
Savage.
I ate too much for lunch. I'm sleepy. My mind works fine. I'm just dozy and it's cold. We have the high 30s. Some will scream global warming. However, I must tell you, I've studied temperature in the Bay Area going back over 100 years. The days were just as cold in December, January, February as they are now. I've seen snow up on the mountains here. The occasional snow. Everyone loves it. But don't tell that to the, let's say, the Neolithic thinkers amongst us who are sure that we're causing global warming. But anyway, so, you see, here's the problem. Is when you try to do good for yourself, sometimes you do bad. Take me, for example. I went to an Asian restaurant to eat some lunch. I don't know, you know, the Asian restaurant. As I tell them, no fat. I mean, no oil or less oil and no sugar. And it usually comes out fairly good. So I finish eating and I'm starving. I had the plate lunch and I'm starving. I go out. I walk right into McDonald's nearby. I said, why am I doing this? I said to myself, why am I doing this? I just ate lunch in the Asian restaurant. Answer, because I'm starving. And I sneakily ordered a fish burger. But then I said, without cheese and without sauce, with extra onions. In other words, I was, it's like the guy, the devil on my left shoulder said, ah, have the fish burger. The angel on my right shoulder said, all right, at least cut out the cheese, please. The alarm bells were going off. And add onions to it. Onions. So I said, all right. Then the Mexican woman says to me, do you want the sandwich? I said, what do you mean? I knew what she meant. I said, no, give me the French fries too. Now, I got to tell you something. With the Diet Coke, with the thing, I scoffed it down like it was a dessert. It was unbelievable after the good Asian meal. Now, there's no moral to the story other than there's only so much you can do in the world that's good for you. You know what I mean? And then at a certain point, you just got to enjoy a meal once in a while. Like last night, I went to a local hole-in-the-wall, disgusting Thai place that no one goes to except a few local people. The food's excellent. We feel very bad for the guy. His children are always in there doing homework. They're very hardworking people, and his food is very good. It's awful. It's like next to a laundromat. There's nothing more depressing than eating in a restaurant, in a mall, strip mall, next to a laundromat. You say, well, why do you do that to yourself? You can afford any restaurant in the city. Answer, because his food is good, and I don't care about style. I care about the food. I go to eat. I don't go to be seen. I don't go to be heard, and I don't go to – certainly don't want to hear people talk, which is unfortunately this dump. My luck at a table nearby in this empty restaurant was a classic Marin County liberal couple from hell. Let me see if I could describe them. Just say a classic liberal couple from hell. Now, they're in a dump of a restaurant. Every platitude known to liberals came out of that woman's filthy mouth. From global warming, while she's stuffing her fat yap, stuffing a fat yap with food, she's talking about global warming. Then she goes on to, did you hear the story about blacks being underrepresented in law firms, Bob? Oh, yes. Blacks get into major league law firms, but they don't make partnership. Blah, blah, blah. So I start to fume. I'm boiling, and I'm trying not to say a word. I'm like behind a tree in this dump. Like a cheap tree, a fake tree, and I'm trying not to see them, but I can hear them. And she won't shut up. Now, I got to tell you, I had a few drinks before dinner, and it made me somewhat loquacious. So I started to talk to my long-suffering Mrs. S as loudly as I could to counter the global warming argument and to counter the blacks in the law firm argument. Then I got outright insulting. And, you know, one thing led to another. Eventually, they left. Fortunately, they were smart enough to not make it any worse than it was. Why did they have to do a political discourse in a restaurant? Now, I do this for a living on the radio. You have an option to turn the show off or to turn the show on, to turn the volume up or turn the volume down. When you go to a restaurant, you don't want to hear a moron shooting his mouth off about politics. I find it the most offensive thing in the world for people to speak loud in restaurants, by the way. Some of them scream. But some of them scream about political points of view, global warming, blacks not getting ahead, you name it. You name the issue. And then to top it off, as they were leaving the restaurant, they say to the owner of the Thai restaurant, oh, we're sailing to Thailand or going on a sailing trip in Thailand next week and I don't know, some whatever, Phuket, I don't know where they were going. And they do the bow with the hands together. He looked at them like they were crazy. He could care less whether they're going there. But you see, they were eating in the Thai restaurant for cultural and social reasons, to bond with the simple people of the third world. So that's last night. That's two in a row. I had the Thai, the Thai brain beating last night. And then for lunch today, I had to go from the Vietnamese lunch, which was excellent, by the way, but skimpy. I'm not 98 pounds living on a handful of rice, fighting, with the NVA here in the woods. I need a real meal, an American meal. I have a radio show to do. Please, lay it on. So I went from a somewhat healthy meal to a pig out meal. If I had eaten regularly, I wouldn't have wound up in McDonald's.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
Tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot. Full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. The sound and fury quote from Shakespeare's Macbeth. He's talking about the ephemeral nature of life and how brief it is. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage. And then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. I think many of us feel this and don't talk about it. We take the Prozac, or we take the psychic Prozac called television, or the psychic Prozac called football, or baseball, or basketball, or rap music, or whatever it may be, or the crack, or the cocaine, or the marijuana, or the alcohol, or whatever it may be, or the running. And you can get very, very cynical about it all and say, what's the point of trying if it's all a charade and we're going to die anyway? That's depressing. And there are many answers to that question that are life-affirming. There are many reasons to go on. I learned so much in my childhood, I didn't even know I was learning it. That's the beautiful part of it. In that sense, I would say I had a very rich childhood because so much was seen and heard and overheard. And I look back now, here's a story I told maybe once for 2 seconds relating to the ephemeral nature of life and how you can really go down, off the deep end if you look at this the wrong way and you don't have the right spiritual or emotional support. There was a woman in the neighborhood in Queens, attached houses. I can't get any more detailed. The attached houses, which to us was a gigantic step up. It was like the Queens Palace from where I had come from, a little green yard. And one of the neighbors in the block, he was really high class because he was a doctor. So he had a wife who had a nervous breakdown, so-called. I don't even think they use the phrase anymore, nervous breakdown. I don't even know what it is. What happened was she stayed at home all day and she wandered the streets of Queens, or that neighborhood, and she would take people's arms and say, what's the meaning of living if we're only going to die? Now, she had 2 children and the other women didn't know what to say to her. She could not understand why she should live if only she was going to die. Then she would say, but my children are also born to die. I mean, that spooked out a lot of the women in the neighborhood, so they stopped talking to her. Now, maybe she was, in her own way, touching upon the sound and fury quote from Shakespeare of tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. And haven't you seen that picture? And how did you get past that? What gives you the reason to struggle and go on? Why do you struggle? You ever look at your children and say, they're too going to fade like dust, ashes to ashes and dust to dust? And yes, we all get those thoughts if we're human. You look at your pet, your fish, your dog, your cat. I got a box upstairs with ashes in it. I got a mother and a father and a brother in a grave and a grandmother and grandfather and ancestors in graves, as you do. We all do. And yet, it's a strange society. We never talk about death in that way. All we talk about is victimhood and suffering and how everyone's a victim. But do we really talk about the meaning of life and the meaning of death, or only about death as an opposite to life, meaning you're no longer a consumer? See, once you die, you're of no use to the Murdochs and the Morlocks and the meatheads who need you as a consumer, an idiot to watch or an idiot to buy. In other words, a consumer. If you're dead, you're no longer a good consumer, except perhaps you can still buy a casket from one of these operations. Perhaps they'll figure out a way to sell you a conservative casket or a liberal casket with an inscription on it. It's probably not a bad business. where they now start monogramming caskets or something. But what motivates me to go on, for example? How do I do this every day? Why do I do this anymore? I don't really need the income. My children are grown. They're doing very well. I have enough to, you know, basically retire on. I could have retired a long time ago. Why do I do this? You'll have to ask yourself, why am I not as desperate to sell you something as some men are who are younger with young children? And I understand why they have to peddle and they have to sell you and they have to con you day and night to sell you another item or another. I understand it. They're younger than me by probably 20 years, many of them, and they haven't made their fortune or their marks, and they're very insecure about that. So they continue to sell you things that you don't really need. So therefore, if I'm not really selling you anything, what is it that motivates me every day? Well, it's an obligation to God primarily. I know you say, well, who is he kidding? What, are you kidding me? Take it for what it is. I don't really care whether you believe me or not. I know I mean every word I just said to you. You see, I was ruined in life several times, primarily by liberalism. Liberalism destroyed me, or almost destroyed me, and almost put me into the grave. The liberals, through affirmative action, stole my birthright. They took it from me. They turned me into a nun person, and they said that less qualified women and less qualified minorities only need apply. And they said, you shall not apply, even though you are a white male, you're of no value whatsoever, to our new America. Well, it was tough for me to bear. And had I let it get to me, I would have died or never struggled again. And I told you what happened. I told you how it happened. And it's amazing. It was a certain time in my life, and it was about 16 years ago. And everything had gone bad for me because of affirmative action and because of a few scoundrels in the vitamin business, ruthless gonoffs of the lowest order. Things had gone really bad for me. And I wanted to give up. I really did. Well, my son, we were living in this is an interesting story in a way. I had to move back to a house that I had purchased, a small house that I had purchased a few years before as a rental unit. And things had gotten so bad, I had to move into my own rental unit. And it wasn't a happy time for us. The children were still teenagers, blah, blah, blah. So I was sitting in this dark little horrendous room that I called a study, which was really a converted nursery. It was disgusting, with a little tiny window. There was nothing. There was no nobility in it whatsoever. It was a complete failure. And this was after a PhD, two master's degrees, 16 books. No matter what I did, it was like I had dug for oil. I was like a wildcatter, and 1,000 wells had come up dry. I said, I'm not doing this anymore. So I called my son in, who was a teenager, and I said, son, I'm not going to work anymore. I'm going to retire because I there's no point to this. Well, he said to me, you can't retire. He said, that's giving up. He said, men retire at 65. I got so pissed off at him, I chased him out of the room, and I ran after him down the block. And you know what? Because of that, I was embarrassed. And for him, I had to get off my behind, get out of the gutter, and I had to struggle again. That's when I created the tape, the first radio tape. So help me God. A few months later, I created the mock radio tape and sent it out to 400 stations. And the rest is really history. That turned me around. But, you know, it was based upon a lot of prayer and a lot of thought and family. Family keeps us together. So having said that, I had only asked God for one thing. During the darkest moments of my failures, or really I should say the failures of our society, which took some of the most talented white men in history and put them on the shelf in order to promote people who were less qualified simply to make people feel better and in order to introduce socialism to America at a faster pace, I said to God, all I ask you for is to give me a living. I beg you not for riches. I beg you not for fame. I beg you only for a living. Well, I now have a very good living in talk radio and as a writer. But you see, it came with a burden. Remember I told you that God answered my prayers, but there's always something attached to his answer? He didn't say, here, go, you're going to win the lottery. Because if he had said, here, because you suffered so much, my son, put $4 on number 933B7, and you're going to win $90 million in fastball or something. Well, I probably would have blown my head off by now if I had won some kind of lottery. I'm a worker. I was raised to work. I'm going to work until probably I can't work anymore. And it's because I was raised this way. It's in my genes. My father, to him, the most important value in a boy was working. Every time he mocked me, it was because I was too lazy or I wasn't working hard enough. And the way he mocked me is he would say to his friends when I was a little boy in his store, look at this, look at the worker I have for a son. He's a real hard worker, isn't he? And the other men would say, oh, come on, leave him alone. He's not a bad kid. He'll be a good worker. And my father would look at me and sarcastically say, yeah, look at the worker I have, always dozing off or something to that effect. So to him, work was a great value. It's almost laughable in this hedonistic age that we live in where work is considered de classe. Well, I know that there are many men who have much less than I do financially who are retired. And good luck to you if you are, and I understand it. But I'm not made that way. I wouldn't know what to do with myself from the beginning of the day to the end. I wouldn't know how to spend my time. Now, maybe that's sad. Maybe it is sad that I don't know how to enjoy myself on a golf course or a tennis court. It is possible, but it's not in my genes. I did not learn how to play golf. I learned how to sled on a cobblestone street in the Bronx. I did not learn how to ski. And when I went to college, there were kids even in Queens College or Working College who were going to ski lifts and skiing. I'm not a skier. I didn't understand the fun of skiing, and I know those who do. In fact, when my children were very young, I took them skiing. I taught them how to ski. I figured it's a great American sport, and I admire those who can really ski. But when I have gone to the mountains in the last few years during ski season, I don't want to ski. It's a zoo. It's a zoo. It looks like a bunch of automatons. Clankety, 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 clank. Line them up. Here they come. Take them up, shoot them down. Get them drunk at night. Take them up, shoot them down. Get them drunk at night. Take them up, shoot them down. Clankety, clank, clankety, clank. Where's the beauty in that? I used to go to the High Sierras, and I used to walk in the winter. I used to snow walk. I don't do it anymore. You know why? Because of yahoos on snowmobiles. I won't even walk in the woods anymore. Do I want to listen to a putt shooting by on a snowmobile, shooting out dirty, ugly fumes on a snowfield that I used to walk on? In the absolute silence, did you ever hear the silence of a snowfield? Can you still hear it? The whoosh and the hiss of snow and sound? America has become a gigantic noise cesspool. There's almost nowhere to go anymore for any peace and quiet. Every neighborhood, there's not a neighborhood in America that is affluent and beautiful that you can live in any peace. Because everyone is greedier than his neighbor. I think I'll put in marble. I think I'll put in granite. I think I'll put in granite. I think I'll put in granite. I'll put in granite and I'll flip it and I'll make money and I'll screw the next person. Everyone's suddenly Donald Trump. Everyone's a Donald Trump, and from morning till night, every house is being renovated. Every house is being redone. You can't even live in your own houses anymore. So tell me where to go to get peace and quiet in the United States of America. You have an answer to that one? Well, I guess you have to move to the country. You got to move to the country. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty place from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle, life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. This is the Savage Nation, hoping to signify something. It is the Savage Nation. Michael Savage sitting before you live. I got so many great callers right now. Trash trucks, the noise from them. Pollution from fireplaces, Fantas Doctrine, a guy's calling from Vegas who remembers his first love, savage boat problems, jury duty. I got some callers that I'm going to take because it's better than the news. Believe me, I'd rather do this than talk about Obama's cut of clothing, you know. So let's go to the callers immediately on the Savage Nation, starting with Dominic in Las Vegas. Dominic, thank you. What makes you call the show today, my friend?
Hi, Dr. Savage. I Hello. Just wanted to tell you, when I was 17 years old, I met a Jewish girl. She was 15, and I put her tattoo. Her name was Connie White. I put a tattoo of her name on my arm, and I loved her to no end, but she was Jewish, and the father didn't approve of me because I was Italian. He says, oil and water don't mix.
Little did he know about oil and vinegar.
That's oil and vinegar. So he says to me...
That's what I would have said to him. You're right, but oil and vinegar do. So what happened?
He never said it to me. He said it to other people. They came back and told me. In fact, my Jewish friends, when he used to call up the candy store, we used to hang out at Lenox Road and Albany Avenue, and there was a candy store in the corner. And he used to call up, and I put my Jewish friend on the phone. He would talk Jewish to him, so he thought I was Jewish until he found out I was Italian.
So you remember this girl to this day?
I sure do, and that's 61 years ago.
Oh, come on. Well, I raised the question of, do guys or women remember first loves or, you know, college sweethearts? So have you been married and all of that through all these years?
I'm married 44 years. My wife passed away 10 years ago. I would have been married 54 years. I have three daughters, one 54, 52, and 46.
Oh, my God.
This girl.
And you still remember the first love? Is that what you still remember your first love?
You better believe it. That's my first love.
The girl that you didn't marry?
The girl I didn't marry. And the reason I didn't marry, because her husband said, if you go with him, I'm going to disown you. So I walked out of the picture. She said, I don't care what my father said.
Oh, this is interesting. So what happened with her?
You know what? I don't even know. I don't know. And I walked out.
Oh, wait, what's her name? Maybe she's listening. What's her name?
Connie White.
Connie White?
Yeah, W-H-I-T-E.
All right, Connie, if you're listening to the Savage... Connie, if you're somewhere out there listening to the Savage Nation... I don't care where you are, Boca Raton, healthy, unhealthy, whatever. Call the number, and we're going to connect you up with Dominic. God only knows, stranger things have happened in the world, Dominic, huh?
That was right, but I still love her.
You still love her, no less?
Sure do.
You know, here's the funny thing, Dominic. Young people don't realize that people who get older still have emotions of this type. They think that people over a certain age no longer have passion or sexual drive or yearnings. They don't understand that those things are eternal in a person's heart.
Oh, and you know what, Dr. Savage? It didn't matter where we were, and we didn't have material things then. I'd walk around the cemetery, Holy Cross Cemetery in Brooklyn, and hold her hand and give her a kiss every now and then. And in 2 years I went with her. I never touched her because I wanted to preserve her for marriage, which I never got to even touch her.
That's how it was in those days. I remember my first, actually, love by the sewer plant. I remember the girl saying to me, she said to me, no, we shouldn't go all the way. And I said to her, why? She said, because I want to save that for marriage. It's a special thing. And, you know, that was enough for a guy who had a certain sense of dignity in those days. I mean, if you respected the woman, let's put it that way, you know, not in every case.
I'm in Vegas. It's such a different world now. Before, you had to fight for it. Now it's so easy. You know.
Now they throw it at you. You don't have to fight. You have to fight against it now.
Girls give themselves so easily. It's not. You don't even want it.
Isn't that interesting? Well, no. You look around Vegas and you see the people handing out flyers in the streets for, you know, various services. I don't understand this.
In fact, you know what? I was going to an Italian restaurant. And this girl had a sign, I'll have sex for pasta.
So I You're pulling my leg now, because I did a poem called When Pasta Was Spaghetti. With what you just told me, I can say something else, but it's a family show.
No, I said, so what are you, a prostitute?
Now you're telling the jokes. Okay, became your show all of a sudden. A prostitute, I love it. Now, what do you do out there? No, I don't want to know. You're in the garbage business. Please, let's stop right here.
A restaurant here. I was a longshoreman for 25 years. I moved.
You what? You own a restaurant in Vegas? Which one?
No, it was a bar and a restaurant. It was on Greenville. You don't know Vegas, so you wouldn't know. It's off the strip.
Well, you're saying you own it, or you were eating there?
No, I owned it. I opened the restaurant with a bar, with a machine.
I see. I understand. But you're retired. At this point in Las Vegas, I mean, the economy's down. Do you actually see it in the streets, the downturn?
Terrible. My son is in real estate. Forget it. He owns 20 homes, and four or five people move out, and they owe they spend $25,000 to $3,000 a month. He's got to make good. He's got to pay.
Oh, boy. He's stuck with the payments.
Yeah, he's stuck with the payments. They move out.
Boom and bust. Dominic, I am sending you a free copy of my wonderful book, Psychological Nudity, because I think of all the people, you're like a person who's going to love reading this book.
Sure, and I love you because I understand you coming from Brooklyn and me coming from Brooklyn all the years. I lived there for a long time.
Yeah, but I'm not from Brooklyn. I'm from the Bronx. Nevertheless, it's close enough. Thanks for the call, Dominic. Oh, my God. Yeah, no, I guess you could summarize one point of that entire interchange, which is that it does not matter what age you are, passion still burns in a person's heart. People don't know that. You look at a woman, 75, let's say. And you see the woman may have a prunish face. And I'm not saying that in any derogatory manner. Or a guy. You got to remember, they were once young. And that old person that you're looking at, the face may be wrinkled, but the heart is as smooth as it was when they were a baby. And the heart still beats sometimes for memories that you youngsters don't understand are still inside that person. They're no different than you. The blink of an eye, you're going to be inside that wrinkled face. Respect your elders and eat your vegetables. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back shortly. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
That what I'm about to tell you borders on the supernatural. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Do you know that in 1985, then Pope Ratzinger, known as Pope Benedict XVI, predicted the crisis that we're experiencing now in the global financial system? Catholics particularly pay attention to this. He was a fabulous pope. He was extremely conservative, and he was very prophetic. But in a paper presented in 1985 that was called Market Economy and Ethics, Pope Benedict XVI, as I said, wrote this. He said, money vanishes, it is nothing, and warned that the only solid reality is the word of God. Now, this followed the prediction that an undisciplined economy would collapse by its own rules can be found in his article. And German-born Pope Pius Benedict XVI, who was named Mr. Ratzinger in 1985, he presented a paper in which he reflected on the economy. And what he said that, well, sort of a prophecy that an undisciplined economy would collapse by its own rules. And consequently, it has happened. And in a speech in the same year of October 7th, he concluded, quote, money vanishes, it is nothing. And he warned, quote, the only solid reality is the word of God. The Vatican's official newspaper on the same day criticized the free market model for having, quote, grown too much and badly in the past 2 decades. That's in 1985. So here we are. Now what do we do? This is just the beginning of the end, not the end of the beginning or whatever. I don't know what to say, where it's going to go. Who knows? I'm not the Pope. I'm Michael Savage. I am not a holy man. I'm a talking man. And here we are. Dow sheds another 400 points. It's down more than 6%, down 10% in 2 days. Apparently, the anointed one has disappeared from the picture altogether. He's going to stay out of it because, frankly, he can do nothing about it. What do you think Obama's going to do to save the economy? There's nothing he can do. So here we are. This is the big story of the day, which is the falling economy. And what can be done about it? That's why we're not going to talk about it. Instead, we're going to talk about whiny chick music in supermarkets, the noise from garbage trucks, the air pollution that is around us, and things of that nature. Okay? 1-800-449-8255. Let's begin right here in my home city of San Francisco on KNEW. Sean, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Mike. I'd like to first of all, thank you for getting me out of jury duty with your book.
Whoa. What do you mean? How did I get you? Oh, wait, now let's not get me in trouble now. Allow tax squads liable to come and get me. I didn't tell you how to get out of jury duty. You had which book in your hand?
Well, Savage Nation. I told a buddy that I did not want to do jury duty. He referred me to you. He had a copy of your book, and he gave it to me. He said, just take this to jury duty with you. I guarantee you'll get out. And it worked.
I am shocked. A book that is patriotic would get you out of jury duty?
Yes, it worked. I really appreciate it.
Who was it who noticed the book in your hand in the court?
It was one of the clerks, and I guess she must have notified one of the lawyers.
That's hilarious. You mean because you are a patriot, you're not qualified to serve on a jury?
No, absolutely not. Well, like I said, I'm a private contractor, and I really needed to get out because I can't afford to be during jury duty.
Well, I guess that's one use for my books. I guess you could look at it that way. Even liberals might buy the book now.
And I get a chance to listen to you, and I really appreciate it. I really like your story about the guy with the monkey. That really just had me dying when I first heard it.
Oh, Louie and the monkey. Okay, you're getting a free copy of Psych Nudity. Stay on the line, Sean. Now let's go to other callers on different topics. Louisiana, Stephanie, down in the bayou. Welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Well, hello, Michael Savage.
Thank you.
I've been listening to you for quite some time, and I will tell you I've just become involved in the talk radio business over the last year, and I think that I admire you most of anyone on the airwaves, and I think you, and I don't throw this out lightly, I think you're a genius. When I listen to you speak and your thought process, it just astounds me. And I just felt compelled to call in. I was in my car earlier, and you told the story about the skiers. And as a child, I lived in Utah and Wyoming, and I grew up learning how to ski, and I knew exactly what you were talking about, and I cracked up laughing in my car. It was hilarious.
That's beautiful. Well, you know, people from Louisiana, there's a whole segment of society down there that's super literate, Old South, that is completely ignored by the rest of America. As you well know, they look down upon people who live outside of the certain zones of America, if you know what I'm saying. But there's a whole realm of the world they know nothing about, and it's to their own loss, I mean, to be honest with you. And I'm glad that I resonate with you, Stephanie. I'd like to ask you a few more pointed questions, but I don't know that you want to be so – well, I'll ask one question. You say you're new to the talk radio business. You mean to listening to it, or are you working in it?
Actually, both. I do work in talk radio. I actually come on the air 2 hours. You follow me on our radio station.
Isn't that something? Well, I better be nice to you so you can introduce me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so how long have you lived in where are you, in New Orleans?
No, I'm in Lafayette, Louisiana. And I have lived in Lafayette for about 18 or 19 years. I'm originally from New Orleans, but our family did travel, and my dad was with the oil field, so we were around the country quite a bit.
Well, I appreciate the compliments, and a copy of Psychological Nudity goes out to you right now. Thank you for calling. Thanks for the compliments. Next caller out of San Diego, very, very devout listenership of mine is found in San Diego for reasons you can understand. They are really on the front line of the immigrant invasion. San Diego, Paulie, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage. It was so ironic today. I was in a department store, a nice, quiet department store. I went in the fitting room to try on some dresses. Woman came in with a cell phone. It rang. She's talking very loud.
Oh.
It took all the peace and quiet away from my...
Oh, she was in a changing room and she was yakking?
Yes, and worst of all, she was talking in another language. Of course, I couldn't understand a word she was saying, but anyway...
Oh, that was even more offensive because they're very loud, huh?
And so I didn't even...
Well, you know, I didn't know you were going to call about cell phones in department stores. My pet peeve about department stores, I can hardly shop anymore, is the whiny chick music in stores like Macy's or Nordstrom. You can't shop. It's like this hypnosis. They always are driving music behind your head. Whiny, like bad club music. What is that all about?
You know, I get out of there. I said to the sales girl, well, you know what? The noise pollution is everywhere now. I said, I can't stand it. I'm not trying. And I get in the car, and whatever I put on your radio, and there you're talking about noise pollution. And I said, I'm
right.
Living a nice
area. Oh, I agree. Wherever you go, there's some kind of interference with your peace of mind. It's as though the society does not want you to have any quiet thoughts of your own. We're very close to that brave new world that was envisioned so many decades ago, where society was overbearingly involved in everybody's thought processes to an extent we could never imagine would happen, but it has happened. Frankly, it has happened. You know, I go around sometimes to malls or to stores in the city of San Francisco, and I see normal traffic, but you know which stores are always full, and it bewilders me? The telephone stores, lines with guys who look like wedding planners, if you know what I mean, in the front door. They dress a certain way. They look like wedding planners. Why is everyone going to cell phone stores, I ask myself? What are they buying that they so desperately need? Lines with numbers What the heck is this obsession with the latest model cell phone, I ask myself. Does that strike you the same way? What is it that they want in those stores?
They want to text. They don't want to talk on the phone anymore. They want to text. I mean, that's a new thing.
Right, and that is why the level of illiteracy is growing exponentially in America. Text messaging is destroying the low level of literacy that already exists in the country. They're sending shorthand signals, almost like smoke signals to each other. They don't understand how to use sentences. They don't understand what a sentence is. They don't understand what language is. They don't use any words that are large because they have to keep it very concise. And it is not to the betterment of the English language and the use thereof. It is to the detriment of the English language and the use thereof. And that is why the children are becoming increasingly submoronic.
I say the same thing. I have a stickler for grammar. Nobody, they say, they put the preposition at the end of a sentence, you know, like, where are you at?
Well, at least they put the preposition at the end of the sentence, because today they put the proposition at the front of the sentence, which is, where are you going to be tonight?
Well, where do you want these ones?
No! Yeah, well, I was talking about a different kind of proposition. All right, everybody who gets on the show today gets a free copy of a book. I'm in a great mood. You're getting a free copy of Psychological Nudity. I want everyone to have a wonderful holiday. I want you to read these stories around the Thanksgiving table. What a great way to insult liberal relatives that come over. You know it's going to be a nightmare Thanksgiving with your liberal friends and relatives who are going to start boasting about the anointed one. And you're going to have to sit there and either, you know, swallow it or challenge them. So bring a copy of my book and say, I got a fun story. They'll say, oh, that guy, we don't want to hear it. Say, no. These are his family stories. Maybe that's the way. Who knows? And soften things up, you know. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number if you care to talk about any lifestyle questions or the news stories of the day that are on my website, michaelsavage.com. You can call me at that number. I'll be right back to take your calls.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We got so many wonderful topics. I am totally energized, owing to the fact that I had one of the worst hangovers of modern times today, but now it's going to be, it's so late in the day already. The coffee, the vitamin C, the coenzyme Q, finally it clicked in later. No hair of the dog, forget it, not tonight, just air, walking, dog, clean, pristine. I went to a restaurant last night with a business associate. So I ordered a bottle of Brunello di Montalcino, which I had before. I don't know why it hit me. I couldn't move. Did you ever get a? And it was only half a bottle, not a heavy. And it was with food, mind you. But I woke up. I couldn't move my head. Did you ever have a hangover where you could not move your head? If you did, it was as though a piece of your brain broke off, like a moon rock was banging against the cranium. No matter what I did, the dog didn't want to move in the bed. He would hear me I couldn't believe this. For a decent Italian wine, I don't get it. I can't drink red wine. The only thing I can drink without a hangover, and this is a truism for so long, no matter how I try, no matter what the wine is, it's a beer and a vodka. That's it. I know what it is. It's the sulfites in one case, or the fusel oils in another case. You know, I'm trained in this. And no matter how you try to defy chemistry, you can't. So here we are. I feel so good. The point is, I feel good. And I'm sharing that with you. I want to be liberal about it. I'm sharing my feelings with you. Why? The economy is so bad. People are so frightened. They don't know what's coming tomorrow. That I feel that I have to have a good time on the air. Why? So you'll feel good. Otherwise, why should you listen? All you want to hear is doom and gloom. You can get that all day long. You want to hear fear. You can get that all day long. And I can do it pretty good, believe me, as good as anybody. When I think it's required that I scare you into action, I'll do so. Today is not the day for it. I have a different idea about the economy. Let me explain it to you. And this is not just to be a Pollyanna, and I'm not doing it just because it fits my mood right now. Let me explain something to you. We've got Prince Talal, whatever, from Arabia, who wants to put another $250 million into Citigroup. I mean, Citigroup has fallen below $5 or near it. And you got a Saudi prince who invested in 91 to save Citigroup. And he wants to put up another $250 million to shore up the shares, saying they're undervalued. I don't know whether they're undervalued or whatever. That's not the point of the story. I wish the prince luck. What's going to happen now is that the Chinese and the Chinese and the Saudis, who own an awful lot of our T-bills, an awful lot of our stock shares, are going to start pouring a lot of their wealth back into the American stock market, not because they love us so much, no, they hate us, but to shore up their own investments. It's almost like a reverse Ponzi scheme. They bought into our economy by buying huge stakes in various companies. So now as the shares start to fall, they're in a quandary. Either they shore up the value of those shares by investing more money, or they lose their investment to such an extent that it becomes near worthless. So what's going to happen now is they're going to start pouring billions of dollars of oil money will come back into America. Billions of our own dollars will come back from China, which they got by selling goods that some would say we shouldn't have bought, or by undervaluing the yuan, whatever you want to say. Billions of dollars are going to come back from Saudi Arabia and from China back into our own companies, which is it's ironic in a way when you think about it. Now, there's a comparable story to this. Back in the 80s, remember when the Japanese were buying everything in America, including the Rockefeller Center? Remember the outcry? Oh, don't let the Japanese buy Rockefeller Center. That's as American as a Christmas tree. How can you let the Japanese buy Rockefeller Center when they're going to own us if we don't, blah, 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 blah. Well, remember what happened in the 90s when the Japanese economy went south? The very clever Yankees who sold them Rockefeller Center, which I think was the Rockefeller family, I don't know whether they bought it back, but somebody bought Rockefeller Center back, I think, for about 30 cents on the dollar. So they sold it to the Japanese at a very high price, and they bought it back at a very low price. I think the same thing is going to occur in the next months and years to come. I think what's going to happen is we're going to wind up taking back from them what they gave us. And it may not be as bad as you think. So I'm not a doom and gloom guy in the big picture. When you think about it, there are elements that bother me, such as the weaklings who are running the military instead of the warriors. And I've talked about that yesterday. I mean, if we have the most powerful military on earth, which we do, but we don't have the will to use it, it's worthless. And that's the problem. When you have admirals like we have yesterday, we talked about Mullen, who won't even fire a shot at a pirate ship, and it takes the Indian Navy to do it, then we have a problem. We have to replace the heads of the military with warriors, not with warriors. That's a good line. Warriors, not warriors. Get rid of the warriors and put in the warriors. Get rid of the MBAs and put in the men of action. Is that going to happen? Probably the reverse. Take a look at who they're picking to be chairman of Homeland Security. Janet Napolitano, the governor of Arizona. That's who Obama's going to pick to run Homeland Security. You shake your head with wonderment. How he can pick a liberal pacifist to run the Department of Homeland Security? Why don't they pick a woman, for example, if they must have a woman who is, let us say, patriotic, machismo, somebody who understands the war we are in, the war of ideas, the war of religion, the war of civilization. Put a woman in there if you must, but let her be a tough woman, not a liberal loony.
Savage.
We got the big stories here. Dow drops another 445 points, 10% loss in 2 days. Judge orders release of 5 terror suspects from Gitmo. China could buy General Motors and Chrysler. Bank of America to boost stake in China's number 2 bank. Can you believe this? That Bank of America gets bailout money from Paulson, and they're going to take some of that money to buy a bank in China, not to help you with your problems. You hear this? Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway falls most in at least 23 years, reporting a 77% decline in third quarter profit. Attendant helps land plane after pilot has a breakdown. That's an amazing story. There's nothing you can mock about it. Apparently, a co-pilot went nuts. They had to remove him forcibly from the cockpit of an Air Canada jet over the Atlantic. They had to restrain him, sedate him, and a flight attendant with flying experience had to sit in his chair. You believe this? Canada court says that fatsos have a right to 2 airline seats for 1 fare. It's unbelievable to me, the insanity of Canada. It gets worse by the day. Fireplace, police on patrol, smoke can draw fine. Thank God it's long overdue. I have several neighbors I like to report for polluting my air. down the line here, we got Europe backing off on Kyoto, except we're not going to back off. And on the bottom of my website, Wolf Boy, it's a sad story, hopes for a cure. He is from India and not easy to look at. He's a preteen wolf boy. There's no jokes that can be made, nor should they. Could happen to you. You're going to laugh at someone with a birth defect? Don't do it. Believe me, it doesn't make you a better person. Save it better for the Democrats. And believe me, there's a lot to laugh at. Here you got a guy named Obama. You want to start laughing? Get out the laughing gas. Here's a guy who gulls millions of people who think they're sophisticates and smart and genius with the two words, hope and change. And you wake up, and who is he appointing? The Clintonistas. Everywhere you turn is somebody from the Clinton administration, without exception. One Clintonista after another is coming back like a turnstile. So as I said to you, it was Clinton Bush. Now it's Clinton again with the new front man. That's all there is. The Clintons took over the government again. The same people, every one of them, without exception. Well, there are a few changes. For example, Department of Homeland Security, there's mammoth bureaucracy. Mammoth bureaucracy. Maybe they've done a good job. I don't know. Maybe they have really protected us from an incident. How would we know? They're not going to tell us. So let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Who's going to head it up? Arizona Governor Janet Napolitano. Say, well, all right, what's wrong with her? Well, let's start with this. She is a former clerk in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in the city of San Francisco, the Federal Court of San Francisco. Meaning she comes from the most left-wing court in America, and she's going to now be running the Department of Homeland Security. What sense does that make? Tell me what sense that makes. Wouldn't you think maybe a major or a major general or a colonel back from Iraq who was in the military, who understands the enemies we're facing, who understands the issues at hand, why would you put a liberal governor into Homeland Security, someone who basically has kept the border open with Mexico? Answer, because you want to keep the border open with Mexico. That's your answer right there. That's why I'm only talking about other topics today. I don't want to do politics. Now, you may say, I'm doing them anyway. I'm not really. I'm trying to avoid doing them by throwing them out and then moving away from them. Don't call me on any political topics because I don't want to talk about them. I'll talk about them. You listen. Call me only about lifestyle topics. Indianapolis, JR, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it's a pleasure.
Thank you.
When I was 16 years old, I had my first love. It was a girl that was on vacation in southern Indiana from San Antonio, Texas. We had a wonderful time. I joined the Marines and went to go see her, and I was going to ask her to marry me, and we got into an argument. And I split it up and walked out. 16 years later, we bump into each other again. And she still takes my breath away. And I just realized that she's been the basic comparison for everything, Dr. Savage.
Well, hold on. Let me ask you. You're saying you ran into her 16 years later. How long ago was that?
I just ran into her 3 days ago.
How? Just by chance?
It was actually on the internet.
So you looked for her. You looked for her.
I was on a website that I was turned into, and I started catching up with all my old military buddies. I said, what the heck, you know? And there.
So you ran into her again, and you still the magic is still there.
On my part, yes. I don't think on her part. It's been 16 years.
Well, wait a minute now. Did you see her physically or just on the internet?
Just on the internet. I sent her a message and she replied on it with things that I would know. Then I replied because she asked me a question.
Is she married?
No, sir.
Well, look, women have to be more protective than men, and they are generally psychologically more protective than men. Men are much more out there like, I still like you, you know, let's get together. The woman could think you're a nut or, you know, you're a stalker. So she's being defensive and self-protective. It doesn't mean she's rejecting you. She doesn't know you, JR. She only knows the memory of you, and she doesn't even know it's really you. I wouldn't give up so fast.
Oh, I agree with you fully, Dr. Savage. That's why I'm taking this.
I would just take it very slow. I mean, I'm no, Mr. Cupid here, but I'm saying, if you really feel the same way you think about her and you think there's a chance and this is the girl you really want to marry or whatever, send her a couple of messages, but keep it light. Don't get too demanding and aggressive, and she'll think you're nuts. You got to say to her, you know, I've been thinking about you strangely enough, and I'm glad we ran into each other on the internet. Maybe I can tell you something more about myself. Here's what I've done. Here's who I am. Let's at least be pen pals. What's wrong with that?
None at all, sir. I have done that, and I'm just waiting on her reply. And, you know, hopefully we just friends. She's the only one that I've lost track of. And
well, we'll let it go with that, but I'm going to tell you this. This was raised because of, I asked the question along these lines 2 hours ago. And I'm sure that my book, Psychological Nudity, there's only one story you want to read, which is Love by the Sewer Plant.
That's correct, sir.
Now, hold on. We'll send the copy to you, and I want you to play for me now. I Only Have Eyes for You, sung by the Flamingos, and I'll tell you a story right here on the Savage Nation. Anybody get ready with I Only Have Eyes for You? Blup, blup. Is that the Shabup Shabup song? Because that's the one I really want to hear. Oh, you guys are good. You are good today. Shabup, shabup.
I can't see anyone but you.
This is slow. There you go. That's the whole point. All right, now that sets the tone for this story. I write, shall I tell you the story of Love by the Sewer Plant from page 57 of Psychological Nudity? I say, remember the song I Only Have Eyes for You sung by the Flamingos? We're talking Route 42. We're talking 1956-57. We're talking a sewer plant. We're talking about Love by the Sewer Plant, first love by the sewer plant. Now, this girl was so beautiful that people stopped as she went by to marvel at her. We were in a small hotel owned by a former boxer, a pugilist, a real tough guy. If he got into an argument with anyone who worked for him and they got smart, he just beat them up and threw them off the property. That type of guy. Everyone was terrified of him, an old-school New York Jewish kind of street fighter type. So he ruled his little hotel with an iron fist. Because he was tough, things ran right. Nothing ever went wrong. No one robbed cutlery. No one talked back. So anyway, I'm a kid 15 years old, and boom, it's Love by the Sewer Plant. We crossed the road to walk down to the Neversink River to make out. The water was so cold that when you waded across it, your feet turned blue. My uncle had a new Plymouth Fury, so I remember the time. This girl was so stunningly gorgeous, just really beautiful, and the theater companies would come through. They had entertainment in those little hotels and small theaters that they called casinos for a night of entertainment. Sometimes they'd have a comedian who was terrible, a juggler, or a balloon man doing cheap acts. In other words, schlocky entertainment. Nevertheless, these guys, these women, they thought they were artists. You've got to understand that. Even though they were schlocky entertainers, let's say they could paint velvet paintings, to themselves, they were still painters. In their minds, they were Van Goghs. They were theatrical and everyone else was boring. In other words, they were the artists. They understood beauty. So one day a group of these entertainers came around and just stared at this girl. They came running up to her, even though I was holding her hand as if I wasn't there. I was holding her hand and walking with her. We were just kids. One of these artists said, "Man, I wanted you to see this girl," to one of his friends. "This is the girl I was telling you about." They looked at her like she was a specimen of biblical beauty. Where are you going to go when you're a kid and you got nowhere to go? So we took a walk down the hill. It was a long slope down to the river where there was a sewer treatment plant, which occasionally, as you well know, doesn't smell that good. Kids don't care, though. They don't care how it smells. They don't care what it's like. They can override anything, particularly when the lust hits them. So we two kids walk down the hill, cross the river, roll up the dungarees, take off our shoes. Our legs are blue, and we have a little moment of passion together. It was my first moment of passion, and not exactly on the level of a complete moment of passion. But for me, it was the first of that type. So now I'm starstruck. Coming back to my... I'm going to stop right here. I'll go to the next paragraph. There were not enough stars in the sky that night, in the black sky, the billions of stars to equal the passion that I had for the world. I thought I could literally reach out and grab a star and fly away. That's how phenomenal I felt that evening. But then, of course, as you well know, nothing like that lasts. So what I'm going to get at with this story is that it was by a sewer plant, and there's nothing more to it. Now imagine some John Coltrane, because there's no more to the story. That's all I care to tell. If I tell any more, it will become a pantomime, and I don't want to embarrass myself with a pantomime of something that was quite beautiful. This story ends quite abruptly. Good jazz ends abruptly. Guys, play a little Coltrane so they know what I'm talking about. So my book is like a jazz poem. Many of them are like jazz pieces. Now this is starting to sound like LaBrie's Waterbeds. This is the wrong part of it. We get it like to a better point. Something a little more poignant, maybe a little jazz that moves. Otherwise, they're going to go to sleep and they're going to get comatose. I'm going to wait another 30 seconds. Then either I'm going to break the record or we're going to pick a new one. Now we go. Thank you. Now you got it. Come on. Get your hopped up drummer, man. Not someone on PCP. You know. Think 50s Jack Kerouac. Now you're talking. Now you got it. Now we're there. Now we're moving. Moving. Now you hit it exactly right. That's the tone of the Savage Nation I suggest. Oh my God, that's good. Go out the break. Back on the Savage Nation with a little more Coltrane, my favorite things, one of the great saxophonic geniuses. Some would say the greatest saxophonic genius. Anyway, let's not do jazz right now. You know, I just read that Love by the Sewer Plant. It's a very popular story in my book. But my worst nightmare is, please, I don't want to get 1,000 pictures now from women around the country. Dear Dr. Savage, here I am outside my sewer plant. I don't want to get 1,000 pictures of women in various stages of undress of them outside sewer plants. Now, please don't. I don't want it. This is, it's a story. It's just a reverie. I'm not one of those radio guys, you know what I'm saying, who's trolling. I'm not trolling. End of story. Forget it. Oh, you have to be so careful. The power of suggestion is probably most pronounced in radio. You know, this is an interesting phenomenon. It's why the government wants to close down talk radio, particularly conservative talk radio, because we're so influential and we're so listened to. Television doesn't influence people to the same extent. Sure, there's influence in movies and television. We understand that. But there's a different connection between the listener or the viewer, in this case the listener, and the disseminator of the information or the voice in radio for a number of reasons, and I'm not a psychologist, but one of them is that you really have to focus your energy on what you're hearing. There's nothing else. And it's a pretty miraculous thing when you think about it. You take news. They've got $5-10 million stage sets. And they got girls crossing their legs, lipstick, whatever they have to do to keep you looking. But it distracts you. You're not hearing 100% of what the newscaster may be saying, and that's part of the package of entertainment. With radio, there's no lights, there's no camera, there's no action. It's just straight out words. Now, think about the power of a speaker in your house or your car or your prison cell, wherever you may be listening to this show or any other show for that matter. It is probably the most intimate of all of the electronic outlets is radio. It's still the most powerful connection between a broadcaster and his audience. And that's why I think you have to fight like you've never fought before against the evil ones in government who want to tell you what you can and cannot listen to. And I'm going to leave it at that. I don't want to turn this into an infomercial against politicians. We have time for that. We have a lot of time for that. And here we are. There's many other stories, and I don't know which one I want to focus on. I think we focused on many of them. Thus far, I mean, the Iran, Israel Air Force ready for Iran. I'm sick of that one. I don't even want to go there. Lead story, judge orders release of 5 Gitmo suspects. You know, I almost want to thank the ACLU for releasing the 5 Algerian terrorists in a way. There's a silver lining to that one. You know, the ACLU works harder to release a terrorist than they do to release conservatives from the bondage of the government. But you see, the ACLU consists of drug addicts and perverts, largely. And they get arrested occasionally. They get caught. And then you see what they're all about. They live in a state of paranoia, these leftist lawyers, of fearing that they're going to be caught. So they're always attempting to reduce the government's reach and the government's power over the citizen. And in a way, I'm going to thank them. Now that we have a far-left regime about to take over the reins of our government, I'm really glad that the ACLU has worked so hard to release these five Gitmo suspects, because it just might happen that an overreaching Obama administration may want to detain a conservative for spurious reasons, or invent a case against conservatives for fake reasons, or arrest conservatives for fake reasons. And so we'll thank our friends of the ACLU for having released the terrorists, because it may come to pass that we'll need this liberalism under the regime that we're about to inherit in the United States of America. So thank you very much, all of you cockamamie Coke bottle glasses guys from NYU. Thank you very much. New York City, WOR. Joe, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Michael, a few months ago, you had a problem with your boat.
Yes.
And you were describing it. The first part was all right. The second part, when you described the hairs on the back of my neck went up.
What was that?
About the wire being off of your alarm system for carbon monoxide.
The wire being off for the smoke alarm.
Right. The hell was that? So I figured I'd check into it and then ask the right people. And then the right guy I had in mind was the guy I was in the service with. He went on to do other things.
No, I got it fixed. I have a smoke alarm. They're all reconnected. So what's the purpose of the call?
The purpose of the call is, I explained it to him. I just ran into him a few days ago. I waited for him for like these 3-4 months to talk to this guy. And I explained it to him, not mentioning any names, and he says, somebody doesn't like that guy.
Oh, you think someone disconnected my smoke alarm and then broke the pipe on my engine?
Well, this is what he said.
That's interesting. That's nice to think about. I don't have enough paranoia.
No, I know.
No, okay, there you go. Why not? Well, they almost did me in. I mean, the carbon monoxide was bad for a year, but I'm still here. I mean, I did have pneumonia last year, and I'm a pretty healthy guy. Maybe it was a result of that, you know, like a slow poisoning.
Hey.
Nice, Joe. I really appreciate that one. That is good. The migraine just came back, the hangover. Hey, you know what? Forewarned is better than foreshadowed, so thank you for the call. I appreciate that very much. I would send him a book, but I don't want to get that guy's address because... You know, sometimes the guy who makes that call is the guy who made that call. So in light of all the facts that I presented before you, thanks for listening. And with God's will and your listenership, Mike shall return.
Savage.